Hi, everybody, and
hey,
welcome back.
We're back.
Yep. For our final presentation today, we are going to be talking about voice resiliency.
Voice resiliency, that's right. Final session, yay!
Yeah, all right. It's almost done. And at the end of this, don't forget that there will be a poll. We will do our best to remind you again. And although they're not inherently tied to your MVA points, we're going to say they are, so you won't get your points unless you fill out the poll, which isn't really true. The studio guy said it was, so we're going to throw him under the bus for it. So
yeah, that's
that?
Right.
Barry.
Yeah, and it was Barry.
Barry?
A-R-R-Y.
I don't recall that one. It's like, all right, maybe we should turn a camera over to you. It's that way you get a mugshot from him.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's get going here. Let's do the last session. That way you guys can get off and enjoy your weekend. So voice resiliency in Link Server 2013. So we'll look at the link pool resiliency and branch office resiliency. So let's look at voice resiliency here. So we're going to do an overview of this feature, and then let's look at the enhancements that are available in voice resiliency. All right, for an overview, so it's basically native voice resiliency ensures that voice functionality, even in the event of a data center or pool level failure, will still work. All right, so it builds on the resiliency functionality introduced in Link Server 2010 and includes backup registrars and registrar failover and limited functionality mode, as well as SBAs, which are survivable branch appliances that enable the user to continue placing and receiving calls even in the event that there is a WAN failure. In the case of disaster recovery scenarios, Link Server 2013 adds voice resiliency across data centers without reduced functionality, which is a big new functionality added in 2013. So that's a big aspect there. So what's involved? So if you have pools that are DNS load balanced, the SIP traffic can be DNS load balanced. That's for the SIP traffic. But for HTTPS traffic, it still requires hardware load balancer, and we talked about that. Network load balancing is still not supported. It never has been and still continues to not be supported, so please do not try that. And in terms of voice resiliency, there needs to be the ability for the administrator to take down a server to do some maintenance on it and then bring it back up into the pool. So there is this concept of, if I have client connections into that pool, how do I move those connections over so that I can take that pool offline and do maintenance on it? And that's the concept of draining here. So it's the ability to drain all the connections to that server onto a different server, or wait until all the connections are terminated, are finished, and then taking out that server. In the case where you're just draining the connections, that means that you're just waiting for all the connections, all the client connections to finish, and not allowing any new connections onto that particular server so that you can take it down. Then we look at session dialog resiliency for conferencing. So this allows users who can still participate in a conference, even if the friend server the user is connected to goes down. So this is an important new feature there. In the past, a conference was hosted on the pool or the friend server where the organizer is homed on. And so if that friend server were to go down, the entire conference were to go down in that case, but not in this case anymore. So client caches are successfully, so the client also caches successfully the connections to a link server. So that's with the SIP registrar, the media relay authentication server, and the media relay FQDN and IP address. So the client is smarter even more now because it can cache all that information. So even though it may not be able to connect to its SIP registrar, it still may be able to connect to other services because it has cached that information, as well as it caches its backup pool as well. So in terms of link pool resiliency, so there are some challenges in the pool, and we've looked into those. And so there's improvement in the pool resiliency for PSTN connectivity. There is the use of multiple front-end servers or front-end pools to provide high availability and resiliency, and then configuring pool resiliency. So now you can actually fail over from one pool to the other, which is a nice, really nice functionality added for resiliency there. And then we'll look at user experience when a pool fails over, and what happens to the client registration and failover case. What happens when, in the case of a loss of a pool, what the mediation server pool does to failover, and then additional mitigation options for PSTN. So in terms of challenges, The link users depend on their pool for a variety of different services. So here it's for registration, user services like conferencing, presence, address book, and so on, as well as PSTN connectivity. So if a WAN connectivity is lost and the user connects across that WAN link to its pool, then that means that the pool is no longer available. And so the user can no longer sign into with their link client, and the link user services are no longer available. So they can no longer receive calls, and they can't make any more calls to the PSTN, even though they may have a gateway in their local branch. But because of the WAN link is down, they are not able to do those. So what we can do to improve the pool resiliency for PSTN is install a redundant WAN MAN, which is Metro Area Network, or a LAN connection. So certainly you can improve the network connection by creating some redundancy there. You can try avoiding single points of failures. You can install additional link server front-end pools, and you can also install additional link mediation pools. So those are a variety of options you can do there. So let's look at an example here. So you have a data center 1 and a data center 2 here, and each have their own pool, the mediation server here, and a gateway. And so there is, and the same thing is replicated on data center 2. You have a pool, front mediation server, and a gateway. And so these two data centers are paired, so they're paired to each other. And you have your users who have who can connect to their primary pool, and they are configured to connect to the other pool as a backup. And so that way, if pool 1 were to go down, or data center 1 were to go down, they would connect to their backup pool registrar in data center 2, and vice versa for users that whose primary pool is in data center 2. Their data center 1 pool would be their backup. So how do you set up resiliency? It's a matter of just a few clicks here. You just need to associate the pool with a backup pool. And so you specify the pool FQDN on the primary pool of who the backup pool is. And you can specify the automatic failover and failback for voice. So when does the backup kick in? Well, it can kick in after 30 seconds of a voice failure, when it detects a voice failure, and it waits 30 seconds and it hasn't recovered, then it does the failover. And voice failback interval is going to be 60 seconds. So that means that if a pool comes back and is available for 60 seconds, then it will fall back to it again. So let's look at the user experience when the user signs into a pool with a backup pool registrar. So let's go through the process here. It's a nice build-up. So the user currently is signed into their normal pool and has full functionality. And you can see that the link client is operating normally. And then now, if the pool becomes unavailable, the user is automatically signed out. And so the user is informed about the network issues or server issues. And you can see the text over there about the issues. The client will automatically sign in or sign out of that pool and then sign in automatically to the backup registrar. So you can see that happening here is going to be automatically. And the user services are no longer available, but the client can still operate with limited functionality. And there is an indicator of that message right over here. At that point, the administrator now says, okay, well, let's invoke the pool failover to the backup pool. So the administrator can say, okay, the front end pool, the primary pool has gone down. Let's invoke the backup pool to be the failover pool so that user services can be restored. And then at that point, when the pool is available again, the administrator invokes a pool. So when the primary pool comes back, the administrator can invoke a pool failback so that the user can then sign out from the backup pool and sign back into the primary pool automatically.
Right.
And you can see the PowerShell commands are invoked here at the bottom. And at that point, the client signs in to its original pool and operation is back to normal. So that's how it operates, which is kind of nice. So there's very little work that the administrator needs to do except for basically invoking a pool failover through backup and then failback.
In general, remember we talked about this in 3.3.6, so if the CMS is located on the failed pool, we'll have to move that as well. If we have routes that are tied to this pool, then we maybe need to fail those as well, such as federation routes or edge servers that are tied to your services. But in general, if it's just a user pool with no users on it, then yes, we can just fail over, fail back as required to get the pool services of the paired pool to come up and be run on this other pool. Also keep in mind when we fail over a pool for resiliency, it's taking over all services. So if we fail over just resiliency of voice, voice is all we're dealing with. When we do a pool failover, all services are moved over. That means that that new pool needs to be able to take the load on of all those users for conferencing, for data sharing, for video, for logging in general, for everything that happens to be fully there. So that, that pool needs to be sized accordingly or it's going to fail miserably.
Good point. All right, so the next part is the registration and failover. So here we can see that the primary pool that the user has is going to be in data center 1. So they're going to go and connect to the Active Directory and DNS. Well, they're going to resolve the DNS so that they can find out what the next hop is, the FKDN for which they need to connect. Then in step 3, the client is going to connect to the director, find out where their pool is located. The director provides that information. And then finally, the user connects to the pool and has access to its, all of its services. Now, when the case happens of a failover to the backup registrar, then at that point, step 6 here is the client connects to the secondary, to the backup pool. And it knows what the FKDN of this backup pool is because its primary pool has given that information to the client. And the client has cached that information there. So that's how it works. So let's look at the scenario where there's a loss of pool where the mediation server fails over. So in this case here, you have a separate mediation server pool. And so what actually happens here is when the primary front-end server fails, it has a pairing with a secondary data center, it can fail over to another front-end server pool. And so here you can specify the next hop for the mediation server, what its backup pool is going to be. So that way there is no loss of connectivity. Even though, so that calls that are coming in from the PSTN will come into the mediation server and still be able to be routed because it's using the backup registrar on the backup pool. All right, so let's look at some additional mitigation options for PSTN because obviously PSTN is going to be a enterprise wide and critical service that enterprise is going to need. So let's look at some of the options here. So we have gateway deployments and you have PSTN connectivity issues. So you can deploy multiple gateways to the same numbering plan. That's an option. And with the MN configuration, you can set up multiple trunks to, and you can have a mesh between gateways and mediation servers. So that helps create redundancy by creating redundant trunks to eliminate single points of failures. You can configure routes and backup routes to gateways on the same location or different locations. And on the PSTN connectivity side, you can deploy redundant PSTN connections, possibly from multiple providers. So if you have them all from a single provider and there's a huge disaster from that provider and everything goes down, well, you're still SOL, so that's not going to work. So getting PSTN connectivity from multiple providers helps mitigate even further those kinds of issues. Although rare, it can happen. And then you can consider SIP trunking and distributed termination. So that's even another option. So you could use that as a backup as well. And then define multiple trunks through your different mediation servers. That's going to assist you in those aspects. So in terms of branch office resiliency, so you're going to have a branch office and it's going to be connected to a WAN link. And so that WAN link, as we know, can be sometimes unreliable and can go down. So there are some challenges there that we have to look into. And then we'll look into improving the branch resiliency and the use of the SBA for creating that resiliency, its functionalities and components. And then the relationship between the backup and the failover aspects. Branch resiliency options. We'll look at sizing and the different types of options you can have there. And then we'll look at the pool failure user experience in that case. And then what happens in the case of a branch client registration scenarios, media path, and signaling. And then the first-time client signing experience on an SBA. And what happens when the client failover if the SBA is unavailable as well. All right. So branch office challenges. So in this scenario here, you have two branch offices and you have a data center. So in this data center here, the branch offices are connected to the data center through a WAN link. And PSTN connectivity is through the data center. So if the WAN link were to go down, you lose both all access, right? You have no sync, you have no SIP connectivity, so you can't even sign into your front-end servers, and you clearly don't have PSTN connectivity. So the user has a SIP connection here to its SIP to its pool on the data center, and media traffic will go through the mediation server here through its gateway in and off to the PSTN. So we are really dependent on the WAN link to be up in order to make in order to have connectivity. So in terms of improving branch resiliency, we can install redundant WAN connections. That can be a little costly, but it does not necessarily address general WAN failure. It just means that you have redundancy. So if one were to fail, hopefully the second WAN link hasn't gone down, and you can use that WAN link as well. Now, of course, if both WAN links were to go down, that doesn't improve your odds, unfortunately. So that's one option, but not necessarily the only option. Deploying a link pool on each branch site, that is certainly an option. So you could have a link pool on every branch site, but that does it has its own drawbacks. It increases cost, maintenance. You have to now have somebody maintain those servers in the branch offices. You have to look at purchasing licenses and new hardware as well. So it really does increase not only the initial TOC, but also the ongoing cost of the initial capital investment, but also the ongoing cost, so the overall TOC there. And then, of course, the administrative overhead and staff staffing that's required on the branch sites to manage those things. So that is certainly a consideration to take into account if you want to have resiliency on the branch site. Other options is deploying PSTN connectivity on each branch site. So that means is you don't actually have a link pool in each of the branch sites, but you do have a gateway and PSTN connectivity in each of the branch sites. So that requires link pool and mediation server on site to function in case of a WAN failure. So if you want to have that, then if you're going to have a pool in the branch office, then you also want to have a PSTN connectivity. So jumping a little ahead here. So that way you have connectivity to the PSTN regardless of whether the WAN link goes down or not. And here you can see the option is to use a survivable branch appliance. So the branch office users will still connect, can still connect to the link pool in a data center, but its PSTN calls will actually egress out of the survivable branch appliance, which would have a gateway embedded in it, and that would go out to the PSTN. So this is one level of optimization here. So what actually happens, as we talked a little bit about it, is that if the WAN link were to go down, in this scenario here, you don't have any link pools, so that reduces on your cost, administrative cost, but you do have a SBA here. So these users are still connecting to your pool at the data center for SIP signaling aspects. But for the calls themselves, they would go out to the through the branch office appliance. So SBA functionality. So there's normal and failover mode. There's a SIP registrar. It has a SIP registrar as well. It has a SIP proxy and routing engine. It has PSTN connectivity. You can do voicemail routing, PSTN rerouting, and it can be centrally provisioned. So that means that you don't actually have to have administrators at your branch offices to manage these SBAs. It can be centrally managed from your main site. And it supports up to 1,000 users per SBA. So what components are included in the survivable branch appliance? You have, we talked about the PSTN gateway, so it comes included, packaged with a PSTN gateway so it can connect out to the PSTN. It has also a link mediation service as part of it, so it can talk to the PSTN gateway. So it's kind of everything in a box, in essence. It has its own CMS storage, and then it has the main three components, which is the routing engine, the registrar, and then the link core components there. And all of these sit on top of a Windows server. So it is an appliance. It's just one box. It's got everything in there. You don't have to worry about managing it. or updating all these aspects here, these components, and it's provided as is. And so you just stick it in a closet, and it's all taken care of. So backup and failure relationships. So with a data center here on the left side and another data center on the right side, an SBA can be connected to both pools. So for example, if connectivity to the pool on the right-hand side goes down, it can still connect to the pool on the left-hand side. So this in this case, for example, is this would be the primary pool, and then that would be the backup pool, and you can specify which front-end pool is your primary and backup for resiliency. So it's a nice feature.
The key there is that the SBA cannot utilize the backup pool as a resilient pool. It's tied to, it's an arm off of the main pool. And so in the event of its pool failing, it has nowhere to go because it doesn't have a backup to go to.
Right. So let's look in terms of sizing. So you have a data center on the left side. So you got your pool, your mediation server, and your gateway that's connected to the WAN link. And then you have three different branches. And you can see these are the three different options you can have. And let's go from bottom to up here, where depending on the number of users, these would be the recommendations. So if you only have up to 25 users and you have a branch office, not putting anything in there and just having them connect to through your WAN link, so they'll be fully dependent on your data center services through the WAN link, may be acceptable, depending on how critical connectivity is, so that in the case that the WAN link were to go down, they lose full connectivity. If you have more users, up to 1,000, then you can consider deploying a survival branch appliance in that branch office, and we covered what's supported in those situations. So calls would still be able to come in and out, but the link connectivity would go down or be limited when the WAN link were to go down. And then if you are above 1,000 users, then consider deploying a survival branch server. So this is actually just a server running on Windows, just like another server role, and it would be associated with its own gateway out there. And so in that case, this provides more scalability and more access. So let's look at the survival branch server. So in this case here, we can see that we have an enterprise pool connected to another enterprise pool, and then, trying to connect to another enterprise pool, and then there's a one-to-one mapping between this enterprise pool and the standard edition. Now, if you have a mapping between a standard edition pool and an enterprise pool, it can't have another, it can't be chained. It's just a pair and that's it. However, in the case where you have a pairing of two enterprise pools, you can still have another pairing of one to many with a survival branch appliance or survival branch server. So that's the difference here. But you can't do that if you have a standard edition server. So that's the main takeaway from this slide that you want to keep in mind. Am I advancing? There we go. So let's look at the user experience when a user signs into an SBA with the user services from a pool. So that means that the user is connected to the pool, but it has services, but it's also signed into the SBA. While it's signed into the SBA, but its user services are coming from the pool itself. So the client signs in normally and has full functionality, and then when the pool or the WAN link goes down, the client is informed about the network or server issues that they're occurring. And so there is a message on the link client that indicates that information. And then the client runs in a limited functionality mode. So here you can see it's different than in the previous case. So it has functionality, but it is limited. And once the WAN link connectivity is restored, the client can sign out and sign back in. And then at that point, the user has full functionality again. And so that is the user experience that they're going to get in the case of the WAN link going down or the primary pool going down there, the user services pool going down. So let's look at the SBA's branch client registration scenarios. So you have three different scenarios here. And we have the branch, the data center over here at the top, and you have WAN and PSTN connectivity to the branch office. Now, the branch office, you have an SBA and users. And so you have a client register at the SBA. So this user is registered to the SBA. If the WAN link were to go down, it can still have PSTN connectivity there. But if the SBA were to go down, it can specify its backup to be the pool, the primary pool in the data center. And then assuming that the WAN link is still up, the users can connect to the backup pool in the data center and still maintain connectivity and access. So in this case here, if the WAN link goes down, there's no change. The WAN link connectivity issue does not affect the client because the user is connected to the SBA directly. So this connection here remains unaffected. Now, in this case, the client registers with the associated backup pool in the data center. So if the SBA were to go down, looks like I just went through the slides here, the user will go to the backup pool, which is in the data center. And that will maintain the user experience there. All right, so let's look at the signaling and media path. So in a normal case, we can see here that the same type of scenario, that signaling and media does not traverse the WAN link in this particular case, right? The user is signed to the SBA, and the media traffic can go direct between the users inside that branch office. In the case where the user in the branch office is communicating with a user in the main data center, then that traffic is going to go, both the signaling and the media traffic is going to go through the WAN link as well. So let's look over here. And so you can see there that it traverses. So the SBA routes a call to the other cluster. So there's a routing that happens there. Now clearly, if the connectivity at the WAN link were to go down, this connection would break down, and so that would be a problem. Now in the case of the branch office PSTN calls, the SBA gateway is used, but the WAN link is not used. So the branch office can connect to the PSTN directly because it has a gateway. So in this case, there is no the signaling and the media traffic just goes directly from the SBA out to the PSTN. None of the data center is involved in that case, and so it provides that level of resiliency and independence. So in the case that the WAN link in this first scenario here on the left side, the interbranch calls, there's just no impact. So users in here, they will be able to talk to each other. They can have two-way conversations, IM, application sharing. Audio conferencing is possible through the PSTN out here, but there is no presence or video conferencing because they don't have access to the user services on the backup pool. In the case where the WAN link goes down in this scenario here, the SBA initiates PSTN rerouting. So if it's trying to call, if there was a call going on between this user in the branch office and the data center, like we saw in the previous slide, and the WAN link goes down, the SBA can reroute the call to the PSTN to the user, and the media is over the PSTN for voice only. There wouldn't be, if there was video, that wouldn't work. IM also wouldn't work, so it would just only be for voice aspects there. And then in the final case here for the branch PSTN calls, the client registers with the backup registrar pool in the data center, and there is just no loss of functionality. The backup PSTN connection in the domain controller is used, so if you were to do a call, it would go out through this PSTN gateway. All right, let's look at the first time user sign-in experience. So from a user perspective here in a branch office, the first thing that happens, and this is assuming here that this is the WAN link, the user is going to connect to Active Directory in DNS and resolve the SRV records, the A records that it needs to find the next hop, and that next hop will be the director in this case. The director will then authenticate the user. Once authenticated, the user will figure out which pool the user is on and will redirect the user to its pool. And then in this case, the link server will also issue a certificate to the user, to the client, that then will be cached locally. And then the client returns to the director and authenticates using the certificate. So it initially authenticates using its username and password, then it requests a certificate once it's authenticated. And once it has a certificate, it'll go and re-authenticate again, but this time with the certificate. And then the client can then sign into the SBA using the cash certificate. So it doesn't actually need to have, the SBA does not need to have the user's credentials, because that user's certificate is then sent from the director to the SBA and it caches it over there. So the authentication does not involve Active Directory in that case. So in terms of client failover, there's a lot of client failovers happening here. With client failover, if the SBA is unavailable, then the SBA can elect a backup pool. And so what happens here is the user connects to its SBA, and if there is a failure there, then it'll go, the client will then go query the DNS and Active Directory over the WAN link to resolve the director's or the next hop FQDN, which would usually be the director. Then the client connects to the director and finds out, the director tells the client who its backup pool is, and at that point the client can then connect to the backup pool across the WAN link to the data center. And that's the behavior going on there. All right, so client sign in case of WAN failure. So here you have the same user in the branch office, and it's using TLS to cache the FQDN and IP address of the SBA. So it does a SIP register with a certificate authentication with the SBA, and then it authenticates. So the key point here is that the client authenticates to the SBA using certificate-based authentication in the case that the WAN link is down, because this user has previously connected across the WAN link and resolved the DNS entries, connected to the director, who has then provisioned the user with a certificate, and previous, as we saw in the previous slides, and has provisioned the SBA with the certificate so that the SBA can authenticate the user based off that certificate. So there is no NTLM authentication happening at this point. There's no which doesn't require any Active Directory connections, because the WAN link is down, so it's just doing purely certificate authentication using TLS DSK. That allows the user to successfully sign in again. So let's deploy an SBA to a branch office. So what are the steps involved here? So similar to the process that was used to deploy a common area phone, the administrator sets up a computer account for the SBA in Active Directory. Then the admin adds the SBA to the link topology. The SBA is drop-shipped to the branch office with the software already pre-installed. It's already set up. And then the technician over there at the branch office can install the SBA and connect it to the network, as well as the PSTN infrastructure. And at that point, the technician connects to the GUI-based UI and sets up the IP address and other networking information so that the SBA can now start working on the network. And then the SBA is joined to the Active Directory domain services. It can do all that, those things, and downloads the topology and configuration information so it knows what environment it needs to have and what settings it needs to have. And then the certificates are requested and assigned, so it's trusted. And then the admin can move the branch users to the SBA at that point. So up to then, we're assuming that the users are either have never been enabled for link, or they have been enabled for link but at the data center. And so if they're enabled at the data center, then those users would be then moved to the SBA. And at that point, the SBA is now operational. And so you can see, based on the color coding, which operations are performed at the data center and which operations are performed at the branch sites. So these operations right here are performed on the branch site, including this one, and then the rest, these three here, plus this last one here, is performed at the data center. So SBA centralized management. So one of the big value propositions of the SBA is that it can be centrally managed. It's just a box. You can stick it in a closet, and you don't have to worry about it. It's self-provisioning. You don't have to have a technical staff over there to go and manage it, just like in the case of a link pool and mediation server. So that's kind of the advantage there. It is provided by third-party manufacturers, and it includes all those components that are necessary. So the SBA is really a full first-class member of the link infrastructure. It is It is created in the topology builder, and it has a copy, a local copy of the CMS, which is a central management service, just like all the other link clients that's available. And then the configuration changes are automatically replicated to the SBA, assuming that the WAN link is active. And that includes normalization rules, routing, voice policies, and user policies, as well as any topology changes to it. So that's a big advantage that's available there. And with that, that covers voice resiliency. All right.
All righty. And video's back. All right. So with that, wraps up our jump start for the Enterprise Voice Online Services Link exactly. Server 2013. Again, I'm Brian Ricks.
I'm Rui Maximo. It's been a delight.
We want to remind you to go ahead and complete your polls for the very end so that we get the data collected. Please feel free to give any feedback and information that you have. We'll be watching the chat room for a little while longer, and then we'll wrap things up. But we do appreciate your attending and look forward to our next time.
Yep. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Enjoy your weekend.